Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 11th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 48 of Who's Reading the Organon. We're going to begin reading aphorism number 13 and 14 today, and I think I hear Vera maybe already on the line. Sounds like there's
Hi, Debbie. Yeah. Hi, everyone.
Hello. Hi, Vera. We're getting started with another week. It just amazes me how fast they move and how far we go with our study. And I wanted to just inform those who have never joined in before that it's just Vera and myself studying the Organon day after day, 5 days a week, reading each of the aphorisms and finding our own value and meaning in the words that Hahnemann taught to us. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, you summed it up very well.
Cool. Okay, so I'm going to run through a whole bunch of little inspirational things and quotes that I came across. I just popped into my Twitter, and RT for Humanity says, don't sell crap on Twitter. Instead, spread good information to help humanity. I just had a laugh at that, and I think that goes for the entire internet. So think about what you're writing and make sure that it's always in a positive, good light. And Wisdom Alive from Twitter says, people will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. That was a quote by Maya Angelou. And I think I might have said that one before, but I think it's a good one. And then I posted on the front page of HWC a little bit of information about the solar eclipse, with only the people who are on Easter Island can see that event. And I don't know how often it occurs, but it seems to be quite magnificent, astronomical, astra something event. And from that, I've got three quick quotes. Buddha says, three things cannot be hidden, be long hidden. The sun, the moon, and the truth. Pretty cool, huh? And then, let's see, there's a gentleman named W. Clement Stone. He's the originator of PMA, Positive Mental Attitude. He was a businessman, philanthropist, and a self-help, and he's written self-help books. And I do consider the Organon a how-to book. And he says, aim for the moon. If you miss, you may hit a star. Okay, so we need to keep on the straight and narrow. Any degree off, we're going to hit the wrong target. And the last one is by Henry David Thoreau. The light which puts out our eyes is darkness to us. Only that day dawns to which we are awake. There is more day to dawn. The sun is but a morning star. That's really very poetic, and each person probably can find their own meaning in those words. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about what's happening on the HWC, but I'm ready to go into, actually, I had one more thing, Vera.
Okay.
We had finished reading aphorism number 11, And the reason why all of this seems to be in synchronicity and in tune is because in the footnote, he says, what is dynamic influence, dynamic power? Our Earth, by virtue of a hidden, invisible energy, carries the moon around her in 28 days and several hours, and the moon alternately in definite fixed hours, deducting certain differences which occur with the full and the new moon, raises our northern seas to flood tide and again correspondingly lowers them to ebb. And so there are dynamic influences which touch us every single day of our lives, and we see it in our visible universe, and that is the connection to the solar eclipse. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. So we're, there was one comment that I wanted to make just about
sure.
the last few aphorisms where we've been talking. Hahnemann has been saying over and over again that it's the vital force that is sick. It's expressing itself through physical symptoms, but the sickness is in the vital force. And just I realize day by day how difficult it is to really internalize that one. We pay lip service to it, we accept it, we say, oh yes, that's definitely that. But when we're faced with symptoms, physical symptoms, our tendency is to go straight back into the body is sick and not
mm-hmm.
looking at the vital force at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's one interesting thing actually, because some people say that homeopathy studies could take much longer than they, much shorter than they do. But I feel sometimes you need the time just to internalize this concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the more that you study, the more you realize you don't know. And once you really get very heavily involved in studying the Organon and homeopathy, you realize how much more there is to learn and to learn from others who have been there and have a lifetime of wisdom.
I think it's not just the learning from, Debbie. I think there are certain concepts which we internalize intellectually. But
mm-hmm.
until we internalize them on a deeper level, our default response will always be what it always has been. When we want to change our default response and really open the track to a homeopathic form of thinking, there is something that needs to be internalized on a deeper level than just the intellectual. It was a thought that I had about these aphorisms and about the way I personally feel about them. And I think also Hahnemann is hammering a point home, and he will carry on hammering this point home, and he discussed it in the introduction, and he'll carry on discussing it the entire way through the Organon, because I think he himself realized how difficult it is to internalize. You know, when you see diseased tissue, you think, found it, that's the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to internalize that that is not the disease, it's an expression of the disease. And
you
that if you cure that...
I'm sorry?
No, right now I'm treating a kid and he's got a sore on his foot. So my feeling is, oh my gosh, I have to heal the sore. That's the default thinking. Our default
mm-hmm.
thinking isn't, oh my gosh, I have to heal the vital force. That takes longer.
Mm-hmm. It's a good way to think. I enjoy that. You mentioned it in the last show also, that it's the homeopath needs to change their thinking. It's a good point to make, and maybe we'll refresh that often.
I think it's not something that's so easy to do. I think a lot of people present, well, obviously, it's obvious. You have to change your thinking, and it is obvious. But how many of us really genuinely succeed in doing that? I think that it's a difficult thing to do. It's not as straightforward as it seems. But that's my personal opinion, and I'm sticking to it. Anyway, we move on to 13.
It's very good. It's a very good opinion. I think life is a journey. We have a goal, we have a thought, and to internalize it takes a lot of work. It takes practice, repetition, understanding, many different things. And I think we should often go back to this thought and review it. And perhaps, as you said, Kahneman himself, as he is developing his ideas and concepts, when he teaches, he's teaching himself as well. And he is using this written work as to change his own thinking, to make it real for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Aphorism 13.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Therefore, disease that does not come within the province of manual surgery, considered as it is by the allopaths as a thing separate from the living whole, from the organism and its animating vital force, and hidden in the interior, be it of ever so subtle a character, is an absurdity that could only be imagined by minds of a materialistic stamp. Oh gosh, we've got a Hahnemannian sentence here. And has
mm-hmm.
for thousands of years given to the prevailing system of medicine all those pernicious impulses that have made it a truly mischievous, non-healing art. Let's take
mm-hmm.
that apart.
Okay, you start.
There's not one full stop in there, is there? I don't
take
think there
breath.
Is. Okay. So the allopaths consider disease a thing separate from the living whole. A thing
mm-hmm.
separate from the organism and its animating vital force.
Mm-hmm.
The allopaths consider disease to be hidden in the interior.
Okay.
And Hahnemann says, that concept is an absurdity. It is absurd to consider disease as a thing separate from the living whole. I'm just taking apart the aphorism here.
Okay. Break it into pieces.
Yeah, it's absurd to consider disease as separate from the organism and its animating vital force and hidden in the interior, however subtle. And who could imagine this absurdity? Only minds of a materialistic stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And this absurdity, i.e., considering disease as a thing separate from the living whole, this absurdity has for thousands of years given to the prevailing system of medicine all these pernicious impulses that have made it a truly mischievous, non-healing art. I think here the word mischievous, I think, has been diluted over the years. Because
okay,
when we talk about mischievous, we tend to think of a mischievous child or
mm-hmm.
a mischievous smile. But mischief, I think, was a pretty bad thing in previous days.
Okay. A mischief maker, what is that? He's doing playful troublemaking, right?
But I think I think it's doing harm, yeah, like you
mm-hmm.
say.
Right.
What's interesting also, if we look at the minds that Hahnemann is looking at, he says, this absurdity can only be imagined by minds of a materialistic stamp. And if we head back and just compare, who can understand the way immaterial forces work? And Hahnemann tells us, where does he tell us? Only the cultured practiced in, I'm looking at the footnote of Aphorism 11, only the cultured practiced in comparison and deduction can form for himself a kind of suprasensual idea. And he's talking about the kind of mind that can understand the existence and the functioning of the immaterial vital
mm-hmm.
force. So look at what he's comparing now. He's saying minds of a materialistic stamp, not minds that are capable of conceiving the immaterial, of conceiving of such a thing.
Do you think that there was a point in history where mankind developed this like change in thinking from spiritual essence, totality, wholeness, and connectedness to everything, and to this material stamp? Was there a period when healing was, as he would say, not mischievous, not was actually good? It was a healing art, and then it turned into more separate the body and the spirit, or was it always like this?
Well, I think there are different healing traditions in different cultures, and also in the Western culture, you have the vitalist and the materialist schools of medicine, which took shape, to the best of my knowledge, this is not my expertise, but after the time of Hippocrates. David Little has a lot of material in his course on it. There are other teachers who teach about the materialist and the vitalist schools of medicine, who are also two major schools in France, teaching the different methods. But there is a development, there is a tradition. The thing is that what happened is that basically the materialist school of medicine won out.
Mm-hmm. And how could that happen? How could the materialist school win? And also, if there are any historians who know a little bit more about this, we would appreciate them calling.
Yeah, I'd say invite them to chime in, because there is a lot of material on this out there. Mm-hmm. And I suggest also that people simply Google materialist school of medicine, vitalist school of medicine, see what you come up with on the internet, because there is material. And it's very interesting material to read. Those who have David Little's course can read it there.
And I still do wonder the motivation for humanity to be swayed in this way to accept the materialistic viewpoint and separate themselves. What happened to humanity that they become separated from their vital force in this thinking way? You know, to accept, okay, I'm going to just fix that little sore on my foot without fixing my whole self. And interestingly, I did speak to someone this weekend, I won't mention any names, who said, you know what, Debbie, I've been having this rash, and I know that it's something really, a message that something's saying to me, because I think of it in a way of a pun. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I'm having this rash of difficulties in my life. And so she used that expression that was being on her skin on the outside as something that was within her, just from that one word. And I think there are more and more people today who are thinking in this way, that this outer expression is something much deeper. And so, of course, that leads into a discussion of homeopathy. Okay.
Yeah.
Do we have more about aphorism number 13, or do we want to move to the next one?
I think that we could move. Let's just talk about now rather than at the end. How would we summarize this aphorism?
Ah, good one. Something about... I'm thinking, Vera, you put me on the spot here. How about something about truly mischievous children think in materialist ways? I don't know.
But I would take it away from mischievous children, because this is a meaning of mischievous that is much nastier.
Okay.
This is Berka has in brackets. What?
Put a new stamp on your envelope. I'm just... he put a materialistic stamp. Put a new stamp. Okay. And what were you saying?
I don't know, something along the lines of that a thing, disease as a thing separate from the living whole, is so absurd. That the materialist approach to disease is so absurd. Something along those lines.
Okay.
Isn't there a poem or a song? How absurd.
Like that. Dr. K. Saji says, materialistic stamp at Hahnemann's period and in this era may be different. Aha. So he's putting a little twist in that. That you're saying that Hahnemann had a different meaning for materialism, perhaps, than we do today, and we are interpreting it differently. I hope.
Well, I don't know. If you review the materialist Hahnemann, when he talks about materialism, he's talking about not about materialism as people who want goods. There's the modern meaning of materialism, people who are materialistic, people who want money, people who want objects.
Yes.
Whereas
right.
the material approach to medicine was that the disease is in the material, not in the spirit,
okay.
not in the immaterial,
okay.
let's say. And Hahnemann is very much comparing the material and mechanical to the immaterial, at least that's the way I see it. So when he's talking about minds of a materialistic stamp, I don't think here he's talking about commercialism of doctors. I do think he's talking about allopaths who can't see beyond the materia peccans. He can't see beyond a diseased matter that needs to be purged or surgically removed or et cetera, et cetera. I think
very
that's
good.
What he's referring to. Can we
well,
go on?
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to Dr. Faji for helping to put this concept into the proper context, which we have been doing all along. Okay, aphorism number 14, we'll have time to read it.
Go ahead, Toby.
There is, in the interior of man, nothing morbid that is curable and no visible morbid alteration that is curable, which does not make itself known to the accurately observing physician by means of morbid signs and symptoms. An arrangement in perfect conformity with the infinite goodness of the all-wise preserver of human life. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this refers back to what you've been saying all along for the past last week.
What Hahnemann has been saying.
Yes, what Hahnemann has been saying, and we have been reiterating over and over again that it's got to be something observable, and this is actually a gift, infinite goodness that comes through us from source, from the, you know, if you say God, if you say the creator of life, that which has made the universe in organized in some way. It makes sense. It makes sense even though we don't really understand completely how it all makes sense. Okay?
I think also the gift here, the arrangement in perfect conformity with the infinite goodness, the gift is that if a disease is curable, it will make itself known to the accurately observing physician. So here there's an interesting concept which says that if something is not visible, it's not, it cannot be observed through signs and symptoms, then perhaps that mm-hmm. disease is not curable, which sets an interesting mm-hmm. slant to the whole discussion of if a person has tumors that are not visible, not
right.
Making themselves known through morbid signs and symptoms, or if a person has any symptom of that kind that is not making itself known, does that mean it's not curable? So that in itself is a debate. What's curable?
Wow.
What's
you know,
not
it's,
curable?
It's almost as if every time he speaks and he sets up an aphorism and we discuss it, and we then come upon our own personal questions on what it means or how to interpret it or what he's telling us, he follows furthermore with more aphorisms, which kind of hint to the answer to those questions. Do you feel that way?
I feel, truth is, I feel in this aphorism he's opening up a whole other big question, the concept of what's curable and what's not, and
mm-hmm.
the concept that if it's curable, it makes itself known. And if it's not curable, we won't be able to see it. So a person
right.
could have a disease that is not curable, which is not making itself known.
But it also plays upon the materialistic concept, because the infinite goodness of the all-wise preserver of human life has also given us the ability to use tools to
mm-hmm.
see deeper into the human body. Is this not a gift given to us, and how do we use this gift? In what way is it permissible to say, okay, not only can I feel your pulse, not only can I hear your heartbeat, but I can also do much more by watching the blood flow in the veins, the arteries of your heart. And I can see that there are clogs in there by testing and clinical means. And how do we use this information? It is also given to us as a tool, right? Mm-hmm. So you're saying what? In his day and age, he didn't have that. What?
That's the question to me. I think it's a question that tracks us all along with Hanuman's work. In his day, mm-hmm. he didn't have diagnostics. He didn't have these kinds of diagnostics. He had a lot of diagnostics, which sadly enough, doctors don't use that much these days, like looking at the patient before sending them off for tests, because they don't have time. They're harried and hassled. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with the system and not the individual doctors. Never mm-hmm. expected practice to be so rote and mechanical.
I think it's
a question. It's a question that will follow us throughout the whole mm-hmm. issue of diagnostics. Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to follow up with, in actuality, he had all the tools at his disposal based on what he's teaching us, that if we do use our powers of observation, of really truly listening to the patient, we can find an answer, a remedy, the essence of the theme of what is happening in that person's life to create a disorder. And today, the physicians are very dependent on these outside tools and not their inner wisdom to see and understand and, like you said, take the time to really know and create this relationship with their patient. And this is really true wisdom. This is truth that they're not being taught these tools.
I would make a suggestion. I think I've suggested it in the past, but I suggest it again, that those who are listening who are practicing or who are working under supervision, just as an experiment, the next time you take a case, write down at least four senses, because taste is a little more complex, but sight, smell, touch, and hearing. Because Hanuman is constantly mm-hmm. telling us by means of the senses, what we observe by means of the senses. So just to make a note, in your case notes, sight, what do I see? Hearing, what do I hear? Smell, what do I smell? And touch, mm-hmm. what does this patient feel like to touch? Like to touch mm-hmm. the hand, to see if it's clammy, to see if it's dry.
Okay, I'm putting you on the spot now. We need mm-hmm. a closure for today, aphorism number 14. We could read it. There is in the interior of man nothing morbid that is curable and no visible morbid alteration that is curable, which does not make itself known to the accurately observing physician by means of morbid signs and symptoms, an arrangement in perfect conformity with the infinite goodness of the all-wise preserver of human life. And what do we say personally? How do we take this in on a personal level?
Have the sense to see if it's curable. I don't know.
Pretty cool. That's a very good pun, have the sense. And just like that lady who understood that a rash meant more than just a rash on the outside. Okay, so you're using have the sense to see, which is a sense, what is curable. Uh-huh. Okay, we're going to continue with that thought on the next show. I want to thank everyone for listening, for Vera, for doing this wonderful radio show project with me.
Okay, so, thanks, Debbie, to you. And
thank
everyone.
You, and everyone have a great day.
Okay,
and
bye.
See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.